A Weekend with Jason Dacey replay from Money FM 89.3.
Well, this is our International News Week in review with Steve Oaken, senior advisor at McClarty and Associates, former Clinton administration official. This week, Steve, we see United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin traveling to Beijing for the latest round of high-level trade talks on March 28th. Now, you're a bit of an expert in this area. What can we expect?
Well, the real question is, how much is the U.S. going to demand that whatever trade agreement is reached, if one is reached between the U.S. and China, is enforceable? What is it that the U.S. is going to have in place to make sure that the Chinese live up to their commitments? Because from the U.S. government perspective, the U.S. business perspective, the Chinese have typically not lived up to the spirit of their commitments, if not the letter of their commitments. And so the Chinese are going to not want two things. They are not going to want to have the U.S. having a constant review of their actions, and they want these tariffs, the $250 billion in tariffs, to come down right away. Donald Trump seemed to said he's not going to take the tariffs down, even if the Chinese agreed to take actions to prevent the forced technology transfers that the U.S. has been complaining about. So it really is up in the air whether we're going to get an agreement or not.
And President Donald Trump said on Friday that the negotiations with China were progressing and a final agreement seemed probable. The world's two largest economies seeking to ease tensions for an 8-month-old trade war now, and it really is setting jitters across the markets.
And it should continue to set jitters across the markets. I mean, we're really at a very difficult point in the negotiations. If the U.S. was willing to accept China buying, tens of billions of dollars of soybeans and of LNG and maybe of aircraft, this could have been fixed a long time ago. But the hawks in the administration want China to fundamentally change their government and their economic models, and the Chinese don't want to do that.
And there's another date looming as well, April the 3rd, because the United States will receive a Chinese trade delegation led by Vice President Liu He for meetings in Washington then. So each step's important. How so do you think this the one in Washington will be different to the one we're going to see in Beijing this week?
Well, I don't know how if it'll be any different, because the ultimate decision maker in the U.S. is Donald Trump. And I think the Trump walking away in Hanoi from Kim does not lead a bad precedent for the Chinese, because they don't want President Xi to go to Mar-a-Lago and then to leave empty-handed. So there has to be some firm deal done before you're going to get this leader meeting. But Donald Trump wants to be the one who negotiates the agreement. He wants to be the one who signs the agreement. The Chinese don't work that way. And I don't know if Donald Trump recognizes that you can't negotiate with China like you negotiate with Kim, although you may end up with the same result.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, I'm going to ask you about Europe just quickly, because hundreds of thousands of people marched over the past weekend in central London calling for another EU referendum as MPs try to solve the problem of Brexit. And of course, they've got this 2-week delay. But almost a million people, according to organizers, were taking part in this. It seems that there is a big push in the UK to look at this again. The Brexit agreement, which they voted on, but they didn't know what they voted on. And now they're kind of wondering what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks.
And that's the problem they had. They did not run. It's very easy to campaign. It's very easy, relatively speaking, to win election. It's very hard to govern, right?
Yes.
Campaigning is easy. Governing is hard. And the British who voted for Brexit didn't know what they were voting for. They didn't realize the consequences. And now that it comes to the negotiations, the EU is going to hang extraordinarily tough, because if the British can leave on the terms the British want, then what happens to the Greeks? What happens to the Spanish? What happens to the Italians? And so the EU is going to hold a very tough line. And I don't know how the British get out of this without either a hard Brexit, which is going to be terrible for their economy, or a second referendum, which is going to really hurt the domestic politics. They're between the proverbial rock and a hard place.
Yeah, I mean, a second referendum would seem, in some ways it makes sense, but in other ways it seems that makes the first referendum a mockery, because that's what they voted for, right?
No, and it was only a couple years ago. And how much has changed since then? And so, I mean, I think it may lead to the recognition populism is easy to run as a populist, but very hard to govern as one.
Exactly. What do you think about Theresa May, the way that she's handled this? Because it's been one of the most challenging things that any leader would have to deal with. And some people have criticized her, but in many ways, she's shown a lot of strength.
Well, like, she was dealt a terrible hand, and she's played it probably as well as she could. But now you really do have two choices, because it's going to be hard Brexit or it's going to be second referendum. I don't know that you can find some negotiation that's going to satisfy everybody. It'll satisfy no one. So dark days ahead for Theresa May, but not really of her doing.
International News Week in Review with Steve Oaken. Let's look at another female leader across the world, someone who's really been impressing us, Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern. She's not even 40, Steve. She's 38 years of age. And, of course, she's had to deal with horrific attacks in the mosques in Christchurch. 50 people were killed. And New Zealand has banned semi-automatic weapons and assault rifles following those Christchurch attacks. But what I've been really impressed with is her. What a great leader, and she's so compassionate.
You know, and you don't know if somebody's going to step up into the moment until they're in that moment, yeah. And she clearly has. Mm. She has not only said all the right things, which is easy to do, but she has done all the right things. And it's something that, as an American, I'm, you know, frankly very jealous of.
Yes.
That we have people who can go beyond politics and make the toughest choices and get things done. And it's hats off to New Zealand.
Yeah, and the actual new legislation will be in place by April 11th. And Ms. Ardern said, our history changed forever. Now our laws will too. And it's a lot easier, I guess, in New Zealand to do this because in the US we've seen the Second Amendment making it very difficult for gun control advocates to get things done.
I mean, but it shouldn't. I mean, the Second Amendment does not say that you can have military assault weapons in the hands of private citizens. You can ban those weapons. We've banned those weapons in the U.S. In the past. It's the influence of money. It's the influence of gerrymandering where you have hard right districts and hard left districts and people don't come to find real compromise. So you have a parliamentary system can really work much more effectively than the U.S. system at times, and it did here.
Mm.
It's not that the U.S. system can't work. It's just that it's gotten a little bit out of whack over time. And it'll be very interesting to see that as the U.S. tries to fix this by judicial rights or even by changing the Constitution when it comes to the Electoral College.
And what do you think about the advent of white supremacist attacks that we've seen over the last 5 to 8 years? And we've seen a lot in the U.S. and obviously a lot more attacks by white supremacist groups than by Muslim groups. What does this say to you?
Well, I mean, it says that there's, you know, terror is on both sides. It does not belong to any one religion. It's just all people, different people can be involved in it. And it's something that hopefully that the national security communities, the terrorism communities across the world recognize that we can't just focus on stopping one type of terrorism. We have to stop focusing on all. And this might be a wake-up call for the intelligence communities around the world to do that.
Hope so. Now, as we heard in the news earlier, the LA Lakers now mathematically eliminated from the NBA playoffs. LeBron James was supposed to be the big thing going to the Lakers. What a great team the Lakers are, and, you know, with the franchise history in the NBA. What's gone wrong for the Lakers, do you think, with LeBron being there?
Well, I think being born in Chicago and being a Michael Jordan and a Bulls fan my whole life.
I love seeing this
because it shows that Michael is the greatest.
Mm.
LeBron's great, but he's not the greatest. And he couldn't carry a team by himself. They tried to design the team for him. You know, he didn't, you know, listen necessarily to his coaches as Michael did. He didn't try and make his players better. He tried to take people around. So it was kind of an end of a run. It doesn't mean he can't have a new run. And I think we have to give a lot of recognition to the fact that when he got hurt in December, January, the Lakers were 20-14 and would have clearly made the playoffs. But he's got a lot of mileage on his tires. And so that's part of it, too.
And basketball, of course, is the big thing now in the U.S. because of March Madness, which is something that ignites America. I've lived there and I've seen that.
Well, it's just, you know, so much fun because you now have 68 colleges from all across the United States get in this tournament, and it's, you know, it's a win or go home. And so it's that element of it, and there's always what we call a Cinderella, right? So it's a team that might be seeded 16th, 15th, 14th, beat somebody seeded first, second, or third in the first rounds. So you're always looking for the Cinderella. At the end of the day, you usually have the programs like the Dukes or North Carolina's or Kentucky's or even a Villanova are there year after year after year. But it's watching those Cinderellas is what helps make March Madness, you know, so much fun.
You know, it reminds me of the FA Cup in soccer in England, because you see the big teams losing to the small teams. I always love that.
And that it's exactly like that, except you have even bigger upsets in a way, because you have very, very small schools that have no history all of a sudden come in and knock somebody off. Unfortunately, for the first time ever, my alma mater, Virginia, was a number one seed and lost to a 16 seed last year. First time ever that happened. And so that's what makes March Madness so much fun.
Wonderful. Okay, for the moment, Steve Okun, thank you so much. This has been our International News Week in Review. We'll have more from Steve in a moment right here on Money FM 89.3.